No niin, hyvät kollegat, aloitetaan meidän seminaaria akateemista töistä ja urista. Tässä on suomalaiselle yliopistolle on tapahtunut kaikennäköisiä muutoksia tässä viimeisen 10-15 vuoden aikana. Ja jotta me pystyttäisiin näkemään, että tapahtuuko, menekö ne muutokset perille asti, tapahtuuko yliopistossa jotain todellisia muutoksia, tapahtuuko yliopistossa jotain, muuttuuko yliopistot oikeasti, niin meidän täytyisi katsoa sitä oikeastaan akateemisen työn näkökulmasta, koska akateeminen työ on yliopistojen toiminnan ytimessä. Jos siellä tapahtuu muutoksia, niin silloin voi sanoa, että suomalaiset yliopistot on muuttunut. Että on ihan, mun mielestä me ollaan nyt ihan tämmöisen ydinasian äärellä. Mutta sitten kun me mietitään, että mitä se akateeminen työ on, niin silloin tietysti täytyy kysyä, että kuka tekee, mitä tekee ja mitenkä tekee työtä yliopistoissa. Siis akateeminen työ yliopistoissa on se, mistä me ollaan tänään puhumassa. Toinen otsikko tai toinen käsite, joka meillä on otsikossa, on akateeminen ura. Ja ura on siinä mielessä mielenkiintoinen, että siinä ura-ajattelun kuuluu ajatus siitä, että se avaa ura jotenkin suuntautuu tulevaisuuteen, että se avaa perspektiivin tulevaisuuteen. Ja silloin, jotta ura toteutuu, niin siinä pitää olla jotain rakenteita, siinä pitää olla jotain palkitsemista, jollain tavalla uraan kuuluu ajatus siitä, että se etenee ja että hyvästä työstä palkitaan. Mutta tässä tietysti me tullaan siihen kysymykseen, että millä tavalla yliopistoympäristönä, millä tavalla yliopisto työnantajana ottaa huomioon akateemisen uran ja akateemisen työn väliset suhteet. Onko meillä henkilöstö todellakin resurssi vai ollaanko me pelkästään täällä puolipäiväisiä orjatyöläisiä, jotka tekee kuitenkin täyspäiväistä työtä. Et mikä on yliopiston rooli henkilöstöresurssin näkökulmasta? Ja kolmas asia, joka tietysti on hyvin kiinnostava, on se, että millaisia on ylipäätään työntekijöiden ja yliopistojen väliset suhteet. Mihinkä työntekijät sitoutuu, mihinkä yliopisto sitoutuu. Näistä kaikista teemoista meillä on tänään esitelmiä. Kari Kuoppala kertoo, julkaistaan kirja, Kari kertoo tietoyhteiskunnan työläisistä. Professori Jari Stenvall puhuu yliopistojen roolista henkilöstövoimavarojen johtamisessa. Ja sitten tutkija Taru Siekkinen pohtii vuorovaikutukselta sitoutumista akateemisiin uriin. Mutta jotta emmekaan katsottaisiin pelkästään, mitä tapahtuu Suomessa, Suomen sisällä, suomalaisessa yliopistossa, ollaan kutsuttu paikalle kansainvälinen, hyvin korkeatasoinen arvostettu tutkija, professori Gail Goastelik Université de Lausannesta, koska jotta me nähdään sitä, että millä tavalla, mitkä on meidän trendeistä kansainvälisiä, mitkä on kansallisia, niin on ehkä syytä aloittaa näistä kansainvälisistä asioista ensin. So I'm very pleased to have you here, Gail, to give your presentation and discuss with us on internationalization of academic careers, markets and activities from a European perspective. We really look forward to hearing what is happening in the Europe and then perhaps trying to relate it to what's happening in Finland. So I would like to invite you to the podium. The floor is yours.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I would first like to thank Professor Velima for inviting me to share with you some results and some questions on the topic of internationalization of academic markets, careers, and activities. Please feel free to stop me anytime if I'm not clear, if you have questions popping in while I'm talking. And also, I wanted to apologize for not being able to speak in Finnish and having to stick to English. That's really something I would like to work on in the next year if I have to come back. When I started working on internationalization with some colleagues of mine a few years ago, they offered two dimensions that popped in. First, as underlined by the OECD, there is quite little information available on internationalization, but at the same time, internationalization appears as a recurrent theme of higher education, public authorities and actors, to the point that, as already underlined by Christine Muslin in her work about 10 years ago, instruments are being developed in a large number of countries to promote academic mobility. And internationalization is also one of the criteria used to rank higher education institutions. So we were quite surprised to see that in the discourses, internationalization is always presented as a desirable dimension of higher education, as well as an ongoing process. We always speak about internationalization, but never about internationality as something already achieved. So we decided to dig in and to try to see what's behind this term of internationalization. The most questioned dimension is clearly mobility, both in terms of individual circulation, but as well regarding the attractiveness of national markets and higher education institutions. But if we dig in more into details, we can see that internationalization is a multidimensional object. Focusing on the macro or meso level, there are at least three types of approaches that can be distinguished to that integrate to different extents the international dimension. The first one is a descriptive approach interested in international composition of academic staff, most often represented in official statistics, both at national and international level. A second set of research questions academic flows, the brain drain or brain gain or brain circulation issue between higher education institutions, system, and more widely societies. A third approach consists in looking at the rules and practice of higher education institutions, the rules and practice they apply when attracting and employing new collaborators. And this approach is often inspired by sociology of science. And then we have a second level that concerns more individuals. This is what appears on the right hand, with quantitative studies looking at behavior of individual academics, thus at mobility patterns within academic careers. We also found research combining quantitative and qualitative instruments interested in analyzing the effects of mobility on individual academics' career and individual perception, understanding of the benefit, but sometimes also of the negative outcome of their mobility. And last, there is a qualitative approach interested in individual academic strategies regarding mobility and thus the reason individuals have for being mobile. In order to look at this different dimension, I've used a collective international and comparative research that's been carried between 2010 and 2013, namely the EURAC research, the academic profession in Europe, that was founded by the European Science Foundation as well as the National Science Foundation of the countries involved. We had seven countries, Austria, Croatia, Germany, Finland, Ireland, Poland, and Switzerland, to which we can add five countries that that participated to a former survey that we combine with the one we developed, Netherlands, Italy, Norway, Portugal, and the UK. What we have been trying to do is to use mixed method, meaning that we've developed a questionnaire. We have about 16,500 full questionnaires for 12 countries. This questionnaire targets a specific part of the population, academics that are employed for more than 50% of their working time in one higher education institution. We had to build categories that allow for comparison, so we decided to go for junior versus senior, meaning that with juniors we look at non-permanent position and seniors as permanent position. We also distinguish between universities or more widely research institutions by comparison with more teaching-oriented institutions. And once we had carried this questionnaire things, we went through interview by developing samples corresponding to the quantitative research respondents, meaning that we look at discipline, sex, type of institution, and status. And we have about 60 interview per country. Why did we want to compare? The first thing we wanted to do is to question the extent to which a higher education market exists when it comes to academics. We also wanted to interrogate national context favoring or inhibiting the internationalization of academic markets, as well as the territories of this internationalization. And we were interested in characterizing this socially the peripatetic academics, and by peripatetic, I underline the fact that mobility has been one of the dimensions of the academic profession since the creation of the universities. So it's one of the oldest characteristics of the profession. We also wanted to identify the forms taken by internationalization in terms of mobility, but also in terms of activities, and question if internationalization has side effects regarding how careers are structured. So that leads me to a four-stage presentation. The first question I would try to address is there a slow walk towards a shared European academic markets? Then I will move to who are the mobiles? Do we assist to an international mobility that is socially situated? Can we approach the internationalization of activities to go further than only the mobility issues? And then what is the link between being mobile and developing international professional activities? So there are different ways to approach mobility. What we've been doing is we look at the country of birth, at the country of graduation, and the country of employment. So we only excluded short mobilities. And the first thing that came to the fore is that only a slow share of people have had international mobility. We have 16% of academics that were born in a country that differs from the one of current employment. When I look at seniors in university, it's a little bit higher for juniors. And only one-fourth of academics that have been mobiles at one stage of the career, about 6% for PhD, and the same share for studies or postdoctoral research. What can I conclude from this? Probably we are confronted more to a training market than to a job market, meaning that academics move to obtain degrees, but most of the time their aim is to have a career in their home country and to use mobility as a resource to be hired. That's something that is really clear in the interviews we carried, as we can see here with a Finnish university manager who mentioned that researchers at the postdoctoral phase should be encouraged to work abroad for some time. After completing a PhD, the university is not responsible anymore for the PhDs. They should qualify themselves abroad, and if they are successful, they might be able to get a position at their home university or some other institution in Finland. We found the same type of discourses in the other countries, such here for the Swiss case. It's an academic mentioning, I did my diploma and PhD in this institution. Then I went to the US for a postdoc. After 2 years in the US, I came back and prepared my habilitation in this institution before going to another European country to become a full professor. Finally, 4 years later, I was asked to come back to Switzerland to become a full professor. So we can see here how mobility becomes a key to being hired and permanent position in your home country. The second thing that appeared is that the extent to which national academic markets are internationalized vary, and these variations appears to be linked with the size of the country. The most internationalized country tend to be the small size countries such as Switzerland, Ireland, Austria, and Norway. And I found that the exception is about Finland, so I wonder, why is it? So I have some hypothesis, and I expect you to tell me if I'm wrong or if I can add something to this explanation, but it seems to be linked to the way the recruitment is organized. That's what we found in the interview, that people stay more in Finland after their PhD because they have noticed that working abroad is not necessary in progressing in academic career, and they keep active their contacts in Finland and are ready to apply for posts when they become available. And if we look at what's happening in policy, we can see that for 10 to 15 years now, there has been strong attempts to transform these trends towards through an active internationalization policies, with, for example, incentive migratory policies targeting students and foreign academics from 2006, but as well funding for international mobility, with 30 million being used over the period 2010-2015. And we can see that Finland also characterizes itself by the fact that juniors appear twice as international compared with senior, what is not the case, if I go back to my last slide, in every country. It really depends on the country. There is more internationalization for juniors in the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, or the UK, but not in the other country compared. So that also suggests us that mobility is taking place at different stages of the careers, depending on national context. So when we enlarge the analysis to this different stage of the careers, academic circulation appears to be multiform and segmented. Mobility that concerns one-fourth of academics take place at different stages of the careers depending on countries. In Ireland, we have about 20% of academics that migrated during their studies before PhD, and as many that did their PhD abroad. While in Switzerland, for example, immigration takes place mainly after a PhD. But which kind of mobility are we talking about? When we look at the territories of circulation, considering the country of PhD graduation and the country of current employment, what comes out is that circulation is mainly regional or oriented towards English-speaking countries. We can see here that neighborhood mobility is the most important. In Ireland, for example, 30% of both seniors and juniors from university obtain their PhD in the UK. In Switzerland, 22% of seniors and 12% of juniors obtain their PhD in Germany. In Austria, 20% of seniors obtain their PhD in Germany. And in Portugal, 8% of juniors obtain their PhD in Spain. So what we can see here is that regional markets appear to be recruitment pools, but also certification spaces of national academics. The idea is to go abroad for a PhD and come back to your home country afterward. And if you're not mobile within your neighborhood. Most of the time, the US and the UK are the place of PhD graduations. If we now compare the internationalization depending on countries, we can see that Croatia, Finland, Germany, Italy, and Poland appear as self-contained countries with more than 80% of senior and more than 90% of junior who obtain their PhD in their home country, in the country they work in. And by opposition, Ireland and Switzerland appear as magnetic country, country who attracts for studies, or study abroad countries, meaning that a lot of citizens go abroad for their studies. Now, if we differentiate internationalization between juniors and seniors, we can see that some countries appear more attractive for juniors, such as Finland, Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, or UK, while other countries, such as Austria or Ireland, are more attractive for seniors. Most of the time, universities have more internationalized academic population compared with other type of higher education institutions. And again, we observe variations depending on countries. Same with discipline. We often hear that hard science academics are more mobile, more internationalized than soft science academics. But research results show a much more nuanced portrayal. If indeed in a small half of country, academics in physics and engineering science have the most internationalized careers, social science academic market is more internationalized than other fields in Austria and Portugal, while internationalization in the different fields are relatively similar in other countries. So this data suggests a competition between the scientific field effect and the national organization of the academic market effect. How can we summarize this? The first thing is that the Europeanization of the academic market is quite slow. Academic markets most of the time remain mainly national. And internationalization first concerns research institutions. The second point is that we have a varying degree of internationalization of national markets that depends on discipline, that vary depending on the temporality of mobility. We observe a national size effect, a language effect. The regional area of circulation I was talking about before are often linguistic areas. So it means that you are able to move without having to cope with a foreign language. And thus, we are confronted to the building up of transnational spaces of academic certification. Leading us to question the effects of internationalization on career structure. From the interviews, we identified different dimensions. First, everywhere there seems to be a reduction of the doctoral studies length, PhD being pushed toward a smaller number of years. And as well, PhD has become a key to access to the profession in most the European countries compared. As well, we have much more PhD holders than we used to. And this also comes with the development of third-party research funding that were not so much developed 20 years ago. And this increases in the number of PhD holders, increased pressure at the profession entry. The third point is a shared injunction to mobility after a PhD. In most countries, PhDs are asked to move before coming back. And we also notice that in part of the countries, A new type of position has been developed, the assistant professor tenure track position, that comes with more autonomy. But at the same time, the number of this position remains low, and we observe simultaneously the development of short-term contracts. The development of assistant professor tenure track professions seems to influence the way we are organized at the department level. In countries with a traditional chair system, it illustrates a move towards the department system that corresponds to the influence of international mobility and that we found in our interviews, such as here for Germany. The early opportunities through scholarships to go abroad has become important, so you don't need to be a slave and do henchman jobs for your professors while you are writing for your habilitation. And same in Poland. This academic mentions that internationalization has for effect a new generation of senior academics who are more internationally oriented and less feudal. So there seems to be a link between the pressure toward internationalization, the introduction of new type of status within the academic careers, and the way we are organized within universities. But this also questions who are the mobiles, and I'm gonna try to show how international mobility can be socially situated. First, by comparing internationalization of age groups. Of course, the juniors have more opportunities for further internationalization than the seniors have, so we have to weight the results, keeping that in mind. And it leads us to corroborate the hypothesis, mentioning that juniors tend to be slightly more internationalized than seniors, but at the same time, the effect is not as strong as what we could expect it. The second thing is that stereotypes often associate women with lower levels of mobility, but research shows that it is not the case, as in more than half of the countries, women are proportionally more mobile than men. So this is quite an interesting trend that can be analyzed at several levels. First, there is a contextual level. The share of women with international career is more important when national academic market is strongly internationalized, but also in countries where the gender contract prevailing in society is traditional, is more oriented towards the male breadwinner model. So we can hypothesize that part of academic women use internationalization not only to break the glass ceiling on access professorship, but also to free themselves from patriarchal societal context in order to build their careers. And that's something that's really important in Switzerland, as what we observe there is that Swiss academic women found more often than men a stable position abroad compared with their difficulty to obtain a professorship position in Switzerland, which is very traditional regarding the societal organization. And what I also wanted to mention is that with other researches, we show that when women go for mobility, they usually do so alone, family is not coming with, while when men are mobile, most of the time they move around with wife and kids. So there is a different cost for women to being mobile, and we can see that it's not accompanied with different extent of internationalization, maybe except in some country in Finland, but maybe it's because Finland is more progressive regarding academic gender hirings than other countries. That's something we'll have to discuss. The third dimension we wanted to look at is social origin. And indeed, social background appears to influence mobility. The share of mobile is more important amongst academics whose father graduated from tertiary education. And this is the case in most countries except Portugal, Ireland, Italy, and Poland. We can probably analyze that as the consequence of a stronger internationalization of the most elitist higher education institutions. Students coming from well-off families tend to study in the most prestigious institution at national level, and those institutions being the ones that have more international networks, they thus offer more internationalization opportunities. So we can see how internationalization is linked to different characteristics of individuals. But of course, what remains as a question is, what's the effect of mobility on careers? That was a quite difficult question to answer due to the heterogeneity of the academic profession structure in the different countries. So we went for the age of access to full-time employment as a way to compare what's going on in different countries, because the working contracts vary too much in between countries to be used as a level, as an indicator of achievement. So using the age of access to full-time employment as a proxy, we observe small differences but varying effects depending on countries. For seniors, there is a 2 years advantage. You are hired 2 years before if you've been mobile in Switzerland, Ireland, and 3 years in Germany. But the other way around, there is a 1 year disadvantage for mobiles in Austria, Poland, and the Netherlands, Italy, and UK, and no difference in other countries such as in Finland, would corroborate this tension between international mobility and local networks when it comes to recruitment. So we have, on the one side, in some countries, a positive effect that consists in reducing the precariousness periods, and in other countries, a negative effect that extend the precariousness period, with mobility cutting you off from social networks and complicating your coming back to your home country. It means that, and we found it a lot in the interviews, mobility is perceived by academics as something leading to more uncertainty. And that's Junior for Switzerland saying that we have all gone abroad. The problem is that nobody's waiting for you when you come back. Seniors are under pressure and do not want competition from the lower levels. So it also questions the relation between juniors and seniors in countries where internationalization is a condition to enter the academic profession for juniors, but was not the case for seniors, and the highest level of requirements at the entrance of the profession. Same in Poland. This was priceless research experience. Unfortunately, it does not seem to be important for my formal career path development. Again, in Austria, mobility has a sword of Damocles, mentioned one of the interviewees. I was apart from family and social networks. And yeah, it complicates a lot the building up of the career. So my second conclusion, if I try to sum up again, internationalization of careers only concerns a minority of academics, and we only observe a slow increase between generations. Mobiles are men and women whose fathers have more often a higher education degree, and mobility is perceived as a factor of uncertainty and tensions that relates, as Christine Musselin mentioned 20 years ago, this extraordinary social imbrication of academic labor market, meaning that for recruitment, you need to have some social capital, some local networks, and that it can be enter in tension with international mobility. If we now consider more broadly internationalization of scientific activities, there are some shared national trends that appear. First, more than 3/4 of academics signal a recent international research collaboration. It's true for 2/3 of junior, half of academics of non-university institutions. And we can see also that some countries distinguish themselves by more numerous research collaboration, especially Austria, Switzerland, Croatia, Ireland, and Finland, with about 90% of senior academics involved. While by comparison in Poland, only half university senior academics mention this type of collaboration. In all non-English speaking countries, academics publish more than half of their work in foreign language. In the Netherlands and Norway, it concerns more than 3/4 of their publications. And it is again more often the case in universities by comparison with other higher education institutions, probably due to the fact that careers are less internationalized. I mean, there is less career mobility in the latter. By contrast, in the UK and Ireland, we only have a small share of publication taking place in a language that is not the institutional one. Besides the language issues, the place of publication is also an indicator of the activity's internationalization, as well as variations in the development of publication supports at national level. And here, Ireland does not distinguish itself from other countries, with Irish academics publishing widely abroad, but differences remain for the UK, what underlines the weight of national journals and publishers, and also this geographic concentration of publishers in some countries. The fourth dimension is the fact to co-publish internationally. The co-publishing is often considered as an indicator of international research collaboration. And we can see that in universities, senior mentioned that 1/5 of their publication have been co-published at international level, with variations between countries going from 15% of publication in the UK to nearly 30% of the publication in Austria and the Netherlands, and 1/3 of publication in Switzerland. So we can find here again the importance of context and organization and professional practices. Fifth dimension concerns research funding, with 1/6 of research funding coming from international sources. And here it's Portugal who stands alone with a highest level of international funding, probably linked to the fact that in Portugal, the proportion of private higher education institutions is much higher than in other European countries, and that its institutions have to look for more autonomous support than the public one. It's not only about research, but also about teaching. How does internationalization affect teaching? We can see here that in 6 countries, Austria, Switzerland, Ireland, Germany, Finland, and Norway, we have about 1/4 or more of university senior academics who taught abroad during the last academic year. It's twice as much as juniors do. And here, differences between the different type of higher education institutions are quite small. Last dimension of research activities, research and teaching activities, to teach in a foreign language. It appears a more frequent activity than to teach abroad. But here, again, we found important differences of practice between university and non-university academics, and more particularly for seniors. And we can see also very different national practices, with in Norway 72% of senior academics teaching in a foreign language, while it's only the case in 13% of Croatian academics. So from these different dimensions of activities, internationalization, we can say that internationalization of careers and activities is first a characteristic of small countries. Austria, Netherlands, Switzerland, and Norway appear as the most internationalized regarding academic activities, and UK as the least internationalized. So this leads us to go back to the fact that internationalization of activities is a consequence of English as a lingua franca, of the geography of publishers, of the resistance and adaptation of small markets. But the question we wanted to look at is there an effect of being mobile in your careers, on your practices, on your professional practices? So that will be my last part. To which extent does the internationalization of careers affect professional practices? And here I'm not going to compare countries anymore, but only practices depending on the status of the academic and the type of higher education institution. Unsurprisingly, what differentiates the most between mobiles and non-mobiles is the international research collaboration, with 64% of non-mobiles mentioning some international research collaboration by comparison of with 80% of mobile. Publishing abroad, co-signing publications internationally, or obtaining international funding differentiates mobiles and non-mobiles to a smaller extent. And we can see here that contrasts are much more important in other higher education institutions than in universities. In the former, mobility seems to influence more the internationalization of activities, especially for senior academics. And career internationalization thus appears as a lever for the homogeneization of practices between universities and other higher education institutions. The influence of international mobility also impacts the probability to teach abroad, but not the probability to teach in a foreign language. So if I try to sum up, international mobility increases the probability to be mobile in teaching and research activities and to participate to international research networks. But there is little or no incidence on activities internationalization that do not require mobility, such as to teach in a foreign language in your institution, to publish in a foreign language and with foreign publishers. So the diffusion of the internationalization of activities is more important in size than the internationalization of academic careers or market. And that leads me to another question. Can we associate the internationalization of careers, the fact of being mobiles, with more performing academics? Here I only work on the data for Switzerland, but it corroborates findings from other colleagues using the same database for for the country I mentioned before. I've looked at mobility between PhD and place of work at research time, and I've measured scientific production over 3 years by using an indicator built by Bentley and Kivik in 2010. You can see here the detail of the calculation. And we did a multiple regression using mobility, institution, status, discipline, and sex. And we arrived to the conclusion that mobility explained 24% of the variation in performance. And it means that everything else being equal, being mobile increases scientific productivity. That questions the Mathieu effect of mobility. I guess you're all familiar with the Mathieu effect dimension, or not? The Mathieu effect goes back to the Bible, and it says that to those who have everything, everything will be given, and those who have nothing, everything will be taken. So it's a way to suggest that if you have some advantage at the beginning of your career, even if you have nothing to do with this advantage, it's just inherited, still you will benefit from it all along your career. So what I've been showing is that more often, academics coming from the most educated families are more often mobiles, that international mobility increase the internationalization of some activities mechanically, and that it increases everywhere and in all disciplines the productivity of academics. Of course, it doesn't say anything about the quality of the publication of or of the work. So, to conclude, can we associate internationalization and especially mobility with an economy of quality? If we look at what's happening to the national academic markets, we can see that there is a trend toward a Europeanization of career structure, with a double market being present in a larger number of countries. On the one hand, we observe a harmonization of the minimum quality requirement to access the profession with a PhD, and the development of tenure-track assistant professor position that tend to promote precocity and independence. But at the same time, former career structures remain, and national public authorities, as well as university public authorities, seem to pay little attention to the effect of the introduction of the new status on the former structure. And we see very little questioning about what's happening to individuals that are in between the two systems. What about individuals that did everything to access the former structure organization and that are now evaluated using criteria for the new structure? We have a lot of interviews, a lot of academics mentioning the fact that they stand in between and they don't know what to do anymore because they are too old for the new structure and the old structure is slowly going down and there are no positions for them. So we observe a diversification of career paths and more incertitude for academics. And that comes with a lot of tensions in the recruitment process because on the one hand, international mobility is becoming in a lot of countries and institutions a very important criteria to be recruited. And international practices appear important in the way you build your scientific reputation, but at the same time, a relational dimension of scientific judgment during recruitments appears to remain very important. So it seems that we stand a bit in between two
academic structural systems, and that internationalization tends to be valued in discourses as something that you must achieve, but at the same time, it has not been digested by the system nor by the public authorities that are promoting it. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Thank you very much for your presentation. This was really impressive and thinking-making.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions or comments?
Jani.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. It was very interesting indeed. My question relates to the concept of mobility. Perhaps I missed something, but I didn't notice that you mentioned about the length of mobility playing any role in these issues. I mean, there's a short-term mobility, but there's also long-term mobility. So do you have any sort of opinion on that, whether it has any impact on these sort of internationalization issues?
Thank you. The problem with this research is that we were only able to look at long-term mobility. So we have no clue whether academics went for a month or two in different countries. But my hypothesis will be that short-term mobility has the same effect as long-term when it comes to the internationalization of activities, and that probably if we could have distinguished academics with some mobilities, including short terms, from those who never moved, we will have observed much more gap in relation with the type of activities developed. Yeah.
Terhi.
Thank you. I was wondering...
Is this actually on?
I hear you, okay. Don't worry.
Perfect. I was wondering whether you would... So to venture a guess or on policy implications of this, because it seems that the picture is rather heterogeneous, and the national structures and career patterns and cultures are still very important in some countries, perhaps a bit more than in others. But in this kind of a situation, what is the sort of possibilities for a European policy that strongly emphasizes mobility and international careers? What is the possibility of such a policy to succeed if the national cultures and patterns are still so important?
I think it probably... It probably can succeed if we look at internationalization as a space of certification, and we do not expect academics to change of countries several times during their careers to make a career abroad. Because for a lot of individuals, it costs too much. I mean, there is no reason to change of country every 10 years with all the side effects it has. But what it led me to is to think more about how we recruit people, because I also work on recruitment process, and it appears that internationalization and the type of institutions you went through is sometimes more important than what you did. So my suggestion would be more to develop admission processes that are neutral to institutions, asking people to explain what they did in terms of teaching and research and publications and so on, instead of asking them where they did it. And maybe if we use this frame, we can wait a bit the way we use blindly internationalization today as something desirable, while we have no information on what it means really.
I would like to ask about the 16% of juniors and 18% of seniors who made their careers in a foreign country. Do you have a study on that? What made it possible for them to stay in a foreign country?
I have little data regarding the EURAC process, but some with Swiss-based research, and it's access to tenure position. You remain in a country if they offer you stability while you're confronted to uncertainty in your home country. But it doesn't mean that you're going to stay in the foreign countries. What we see a lot in the interviews is that academics tend to take a position abroad, but then use it to negotiate their way back. The same as they do in the US, going to an institution you don't really want to be part of, or obtaining a contract and then going back to the place where you really want to work, saying, hey, they offer me that much, what do you propose? So it's more like playing game and increasing your value by increasing your desirability.
We are thinking about the hypothesis. We have a research project on the four stages career model in Finland going on at the moment. And we are thinking about the hypothesis that one of the possible futures for Finnish higher education would be this kind of for this daughter economy or a place where people just take more speed to make an international career. So what you are saying seems to be supporting this hypothesis. Yeah. Okay. Other questions?
So I was thinking about this four-stage career model, and is it implemented in European universities? Are the structures in academic career quite the same, or is there a lot of differences? I know in Finland there are differences, so I bet in Europe also, but is it implemented in universities?
We have a wide diversity in Europe, first, because in some countries the career framework is national. For example, in France, you have PhD student status, postdoc status, and then you go for lecturer that is permanent and professor that is permanent. But it's defined at national level. If I compare with Switzerland, in Switzerland, we have 10 universities and 2 polytechnics, and each university has its own public authorities, its own frames, meaning different status, different salaries, and different career organization or lack of organization. So it's really the only thing, the only dimension that we share in Europe now is what I mentioned previously, such as assistant professors that seems to be borrowed from the US and integrated in Europe without thinking about the effects. And shortening of PhD, development of postdoc as a prerequisite to access the profession that was not the case before. And still we observe variation depending on discipline. For example, in France, it's still possible to obtain a lecturer position straight after your PhD. I have 3 colleagues of mine last year. They presented their PhD and 6 months after they were lecturer, tenure for life. So. And in other countries, like in Switzerland, that will never, ever happen. You need at least 10 years between your PhD and the fact that you achieve permanence in the university. So heterogeneity seems to be the main dimension that we share.
Yes, thank you. Your presentation was really great, actually. It was really nice to hear your policy recommendation, because we have to make policy recommendation with UC as well, with University of Jyväskylä, how to develop academic careers in Finland, and in that sense your presentation was really useful for us. But I was just wondering as well that are there big differences between disciplines if you think about your topic?
Yeah, they are, but differences are not the same depending on the countries.
Yes,
so the
well.
Discipline effects really vary, and it's also related to the importance of the private sector, because in some fields, the private sector is much more attractive than in others, and these fields are not the same depending on the countries. So, yeah, to have more materials, we need to go for in-depth research at national level.
Yeah. Okay. More questions? So we are so stunned by your presentation that it's hard to find anything to ask more or challenge you.
But we can chat over coffee if you want.
Yeah. So the next thing that we will have is a coffee. Miten se menee?
Tuossa ulkopuolella.
Tuossa ulkopuolella, eli se kuuluu tähän konferenssitarjouluun. Please come back. Meillä ohjelma jatkuu myöskin tämän jälkeen. Älkää tehkö sitä normaali temppua, mitä suomalaiset tekee, että kahvin jälkeen häivytään. Tulkaa takaisin. Kahvin tuo.